The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Asked at what this description was, and I remember the second day walking up that aisle, and as you turned around to face the crowd, you know, you get that flush feeling goes down through you. Learning to handle that moment is critical in public speaking, and that's where I'm going to spend some of my time today, helping you understand how to handle that moment. There is a big word, and you'll notice that on your outlines that I handed out. The big word is glossophobia. That is spelled G-L-O-S-S-O-P-H-I-A. They're at the top of your outlines, that first group there, the big word, glossophobia. Glossophobia is the big word for speech anxiety, or sometimes we call it stage fright. You don't see it? It's not there. You'll have to write it. It's this space right here. You'll have to write the big word. You need one. There you go. Glossophobia is that fear, and it does weird things to different people. You've probably all heard the stories about somebody going up to have a topic and boom, fainting and falling down behind the podium. And I've tried to imagine what it would be like to get up from something like that and try to get started again. I think I'd go boom and fall down a second time. One of my favorite stories about speech anxiety goes with the story of there was this well-known television personality. He spent hours in front of a camera, but he was asked one time to speak at a conference of about, I think it was 1,500 people. And right before he was supposed to go in, he made a dash for the restroom, and he was in there washing up his hands. And the door opens, and there's click, 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 click. This lady comes walking in. He keeps on washing his hands, you know, doesn't register. And she says to him, "You must be the speaker this evening." And he's like, "You know, out of 1,500 people, how do you know that I'm the speaker?" He said, "You're right." She's like, "Well, you're in the ladies' restroom." What you have to do is keep going. And I'm going to present several different ways of helping your students. First of all, you'll notice that I have one section, one word there, testify. I have one point under this, but it's an important point. And I heard Brother Harry was just speaking about that point. How do we portray to those that we are responsible for good speaking habits? What we portray to them is largely assimilated by them. I have been blessed by watching the young men that have grown up in our group. I grew up in a circle where young men were scared of public speaking, and if you did real well at public speaking, it was almost like, well, this guy's got a chip on his shoulder and he's trying to be somebody. Well, that mentality has changed in the group that I'm part of, and the young men, yeah, they don't just jump up and down for the opportunity to speak in public, but they don't dread it quite the same way. And they view being able to communicate well in public a good thing, like it is. Present to them good speaking habits, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. As you listen to other speakers, listen to those that you consider to be good speakers when you have the choice. Now, don't go to sleep if it's a poor preacher on him. But, you know, if you have the opportunity to get tapes of those who do a good job at speaking in public. What is caught is what is taught. Testify to them good behavior. Now we're going to look at two sections, teaching and training. Teaching is simply imparting the intellectual knowledge of the things they need to know as they speak in public. We're not necessarily going to be looking at how to get that to take place. That's what we're going to leave for training, how to form the habits of public speaking. Teach the expectations, and I've got several of those I've listed here. What to expect if you're following the road of becoming an effective public speaker. Number one, remember that public speaking is hard work. You will spend many hours researching. You will spend even more hours formatting. And finally, you will spend more hours polishing up the product. A good rule of thumb for beginning public speakers is figure 1 hour of study time for every minute you spend on the floor. It's a rule of thumb I've picked up and I've found to be fairly accurate. Now, as time goes on, you know, and you teach school and you teach a lesson, you'll start to have your notes and you won't have to spend as much time on it. And you won't be able to spend that much time in all assignments if you're a teacher. But what I have done as a teacher is I make notes. Like one year I worked on math. I made a good set of notes for math. So the next year, I can pretty much just pick up these notes and With a little bit of study, I'm ready to go. Second year, I think it was English I worked on. But plan that way. If you're going to be assigned in a topic or you're having a topic coming, plan that way and see what happens as you study. You might need more time. You might be one of those who can get by with just a little less time. The second part of what you need to teach is you teach them what to expect is teach them to expect that they are going to have to practice and practice and practice some more until they become proficient at it. You are not good. You're not your best the first time you do something. None of us were. And it's going to take lots of practice to reach the point where you've kind of arrived at your level of proficiency or your God-given potential. Third thing you're going to have to teach them to expect, this is no surprise to you, expect to be nervous. That nervousness is a good thing to a certain extent if it's used correctly. It will cause you to be more concise. It will cause you to stop on time, something that's very important. And it will cause you to be humble to a certain extent. So learn to deal with the nervousness. Use the nervousness to move you down the road of effectiveness rather than stall you on going down the road of being an effective speaker. Now, the last point I have under expectations is something that is not directly related to the actual public speech. It comes afterwards. It's what I call the boom or bust feeling. Here in a little while, I'm going to get done and I'm going to sit down, and one of two things almost always happens. One is, good job, Uwe. Second one is, that was a flop. Neither of those is probably true. It's going to be somewhere in between those two. And I was speaking with a young man that was recently ordained here about a week ago, and he says he usually gets both of them. He says he gets done preaching his message, he sits down, he feels like, whew. And then about two or three days later, he's like, Teach your students to expect that and to live with the reality that it's somewhere in between the two of them. Okay, moving on to preparation. How to prepare as you prepare to speak in public. And I have 14 points under this. Seven of them begin with S. The first seven begin with S, and the last seven begin with C. Number one, scrutinize your audience. When you are asked to speak, try to find out as much as you can about your audience. Find out how old they are. Older folks, if you have an older audience, you're going to need to use a slower, more articulate delivery because they don't hear as well. If you're speaking to a group like I am speaking to today, a group of mostly 20 to 40-year-old folks, you can use a faster, more lively presentation. When you speak to younger children, you're going to want to use a slower, simpler dictation so that they can get it. Another thing to consider as you scrutinize your audiences, are they going to be hostile or are they going to probably be receptive of what I have to say? You should always have your facts documented. But if you're going in front of a hostile group, have your facts documented a whole lot better so that they're more readily accessible, so you can deal with it. Another thing you need to consider as you scrutinize your group, are you speaking to superiors, peers, or inferiors? In the classroom, you're speaking as to inferiors. You know what you're talking about, at least you're supposed to. We all goof up in times we don't know what we're talking about, but you speak to them in a different way than you speak to, like, I am speaking to you all today. You all are my peers. But if I go before Mr. Peters, I think there he is, he's my superior, so I have to speak to him differently. I have to, yes, sir, and that kind of thing, him, and try to ask him questions rather than tell him what to do. And that's part of what goes with it. And if you get it mixed up, remember this story. And this is what will happen to you. When I was growing up, I was in a group of a Mennonite church, and we had the unusual situation of an ordained single man. The single man was a little bit older than my parents. And his two default messages were, number one, child training, and number two, marriage. And I remember one day he got up and had this long message on how any two people should be able to get married and live happily ever after. That was the gist of his message. At the end of the service, the bishop gets up and he's like, well, what he said was right, but it sure helps if they like each other. And what had happened there is he had spoken as a superior, or as at least a peer, on a subject that he was an inferior. And because he didn't recognize where he ranked in that kind of topic, we're still laughing about it today. The next S is scope your subject. Under scoping your subject, what you're doing is you're just gathering information about your subject. And you're not trying to organize it. You just start reading this and you read that and you read the next thing. You look research here and you research there for information that deals with the subject you're working with. And you just start collecting that information in no particular order, just in the order that you find it. Once you have it, we move into your next two parts. Studying your material, that's your third S, and finding your stories and illustrations, that's your fourth S. Study your material. What you're doing when you study your material is you're no longer looking for new material, but you're starting to work at trying to come up with an organization for this material that will make it have a logical sequence to those you are presenting it to, so it's easier for them to remember. And don't forget your stories. Stories are the life of any presentation. A good story a child can listen to, a middle-aged person will listen to, and even the old folks will listen to. If you tell a good story, you've got them, and you can hold on to them. Fifthly, I believe that's the correct number, make sure that you stay on topic. They say the three parts of an ineffective topic is to choose a topic, depart from the topic, and never return to the topic. Don't be that type of individual. On my notes, if you would look up under the title of the topic, you would find a small italicized part. And this is the core point of this topic. And it's the point I keep going back to and looking at as I develop these notes. Am I on topic? And that's the question I ask myself. Is this really building on this topic? Is it hammering away at this topic? Sixthly, satiate your mind, or saturate your mind with information that is peripheral or seemingly peripheral. A few years ago, I was getting ready for a fifth grade or maybe it was a sixth grade science lesson that dealt with the solar system and the order of the planets within our solar system. Well, as I was scoping it out, I was, reading this and reading that, and I started reading about the sun and went down this bunny trail about the sun. But as I was reading about the sun, I discovered that the sun makes up more than 99% of the weight of our solar system. Now, that's interesting. So, you take all the planets and everything that isn't the sun in our solar system, you put it all in one pile and then multiply it by, 1,000 or 10,000, you'd come up with the weight of the sun. That was interesting. And then I started playing with the numbers. If the sun was 45 feet in diameter, the Earth would be 3,000 feet away and about the size of a baseball, 3 inches in diameter. And then it's like, you really ought to get back to your science lesson. So I went back and started working on my science lesson. And the next day when we got to class, I was having a hard time drawing my students in and getting them focused on this lesson. And I related to them what I just related to you. And it was like, wow. And then I had their attention. I could proceed and teach the rest of the lesson. Because I had soaked into peripherals, I had something to draw them in with, even though I wasn't planning to use it initially. Last of all, the last S is sleep on it. The best presentations are the result of lots and lots of preparation over a long period of time. As you sleep on it, several things will happen. It will fix it in your mind better. You will often come up with better ways of stating points that make it clear. I have found that many times I sleep with a little note card and a pen next to my bed. I'm studying for a topic and it just something is one some part of it isn't coming together. And I'll either be going to sleep or waking up and I'll have the way to do it. And I just quick make a few notes and go on to sleep if it's at night, or stick it in my pocket if it's the morning, and later when I sit down to work on it, I've got it there. Another thing that'll happen as you sleep on it is you'll remember statements or ways of putting stuff that are catchy, and that's what you want. You want to grab their attention. Okay, moving on to the C's of preparation. Never forget the classical structure. Always have an introduction, a body, and a conclusion. Now you say this is fundamental, this is rudimentary. It is, but too often I've seen this missed. Your introduction should be about 3% of your total time. So if you have 30-minute topic, that would be 180 divided by 100, about, your introduction shouldn't last more than about a minute. And your conclusion should be the same. It shouldn't last more than about a minute. The rest of it should be body. Another thing you can remember is you work with the classical structure. There's a lot of rules of threes in the classical structure. I was very fortunate on the topics that I was assigned this year to get all of them beat into three sections. Now, you won't always have the ability to do that, but you try to have groups of three, three sections with 3 points and 3 subpoints or something like that, depending on the length of your topic. But each of them should have an introduction, a body, and a conclusion. The second C is choose a sequence. After you've gotten your material together and after you're starting to study it, you're going to have to choose a sequence that is going to overarch the whole topic. This topic I am presenting in the sequence of kind of what a teacher needs to know as he teaches it or trains it. This is what you need to know, and then here in a little bit I'm going to talk about how to get your students to do that. If I started talking about how to get your students to do it without telling you what they were supposed to do and what they're supposed to know intellectually, I'd be getting it backed up or backwards. So make sure you choose a logical sequence for your material. Next C is choose your words carefully. There is a difference between the denotation and the connotation of a word. Think of me as a man. This wouldn't necessarily work if you were a woman, but if me as a man pointing to this brother right here and saying, "You're a cute guy." And then going over here to one of these ladies and say, "You're a handsome woman." You see what's happening? The connotation isn't right. They both mean that this individual is a fine specimen of the human race. But the connotation isn't quite right. So choose your words carefully so the connotation is as correct as the denotation. Next, the number 1, 2, 3. I think this is number 4. Content is king. A couple years ago, I had the opportunity of working at a conference. A friend of mine and I used to do a good bit of recording. And we were working this conference one evening, and a fella came up to speak, and I was sitting back there where the brother in the corner is, you know, where you got a good view of the speaker. And he came up to speak, and he had a very polished presentation, and he was easy to listen to. After the evening wrapped up, I was putting my equipment away, and it suddenly dawned on me, what did he say anyway? What was his point? Well, since I had the sound files and was going to be editing them, I decided, well, I'll listen to it as I edit it and see what his point was. I listened to it several times as I was editing it, and to this day, I still don't know what his point was. He had no content. On the other hand, there is a brother in our congregation, Mike Legowski. He does something that I don't recommend. He writes his notes out verbatim, which I do recommend, but then he does what I don't recommend. He pretty much reads these notes to you. Now, as he reads, he'll look up and he'll look around, but he's fairly pretty much reading his notes to you. But I would rather listen to him because he always has good quality content. Make sure you have good content. Here's a way to remember it. Content is king. Presentation is prince. Keep the king first. Remember the 3 C's. This is your next C. Remember the 3 C's of Christian communication. Clear, concise, and conservative. Clear. Enough words spoken that the message is clearly transmitted. Concise. The fewest number of words possible. And conservative. Using the conservative forms of the language that you're speaking so that no one is offended. Next, I think this is number 6, critique other good speakers. What makes them good? Yes, you certainly may. Am I going too fast for you all? Okay, this is one of those places where critique a couple years ago, I'll talk about that here in a little bit, but it slowed me down. Critique good speakers. What makes them good? And then emulate them. Don't imitate them. If you imitate them, you'll look like a fool. But you figure out what makes them good. What is the form or the model that they're using that makes them good, and then follow a similar model, and you will be able to become more effective as you look at them. And then go looking for a critique for yourself. Before I was married, it was my siblings and my parents that I'd usually go to. You'd have devotions at church or a topic or something, and you know, on the way home, like, well, what do you think? And they'd tell me what they thought. One thing I learned is I had to quit biting my lip. I was having an open discussion and I was chewing my lip like I was hungry. And well, they got me to quit doing that. After I got married, my wife is one of those that I get to critique me. And one thing she kept telling me is you present too much information too fast. A couple years ago when I was on the CLE tour, this is what I kept getting on the evaluations. Too much, too fast. Too much, too fast. Too much, too fast. We're down here in Missouri, and a brother put it in a very memorable way. He says, when it comes in torrents, we tend to get flooded. I've never forgotten it. And I have had to make a concerted effort to slow down in my presentation because I was giving them too much, too fast. And that's what the critique is for. You want to know, number one, what your weak points are so you can work on improving them. And number two, what your good points are so you don't lose them or you don't drop them. Lastly, your last C is to clean up. This is simple stuff that your mom has been telling you since you can remember. Brush your teeth, comb your hair, put on nice clean clothes, because you are going to be the focal point of attention for a time, and you don't want to be an eyesore. Moving on to the presentation, what you should know as you present. First is attention. A couple years ago, a brother shared with me this story. He said he was at a Bible school. He was a teacher at a Bible school, and it was an evening. The students had off that evening, and they were just sitting there in the lounge visiting. And all of a sudden, over in the corner, a young man stands up, and he's like, "Attention, please. Attention, please." And he says the room gets all quiet, and everybody looks at him, and he's like, "Thank you. I like attention," and sat back down. That was an inappropriate searching for attention. But when you get up in front of the crowd, what I am doing today is I am saying, "Attention, please. I'm going to tell you a story to grab your attention. And then once I have your attention, I'm going to try to give you information that is beneficial to you." As a public speaker, you want to gain, maintain, and use their attention. Next, be prompt. When you are called on to speak, get up and go to wherever you're supposed to go promptly. Don't sit there, you know, until the guy that introduces you sits down, and then you keep sitting there sometimes, and then finally you saunter your way up there. Don't run as you go, but be prompt as you go up. Use props when you have good props. Do not use poor props. You're better off with no prop than a poor prop. But if you have a good prop, that gives you the ability to more rapidly transmit the information, use it. Presentation technologies. We're blessed to be able to live in a day when we have presentation technology such as microphones that I'm using right now. At one time, if you were going to be a good public speaker, you had to have a foghorn voice and leather lungs. Not anymore. If you're using this type of mic, like right here, make sure you speak into the mic and always face the mic. If you have the opportunity to use a mic like I'm using today, one of those that clips on or goes over your ear, go for it. That way you can pace up and down like you're nervous. Anyhow, I'm not going to talk about PowerPoint. I'm going to move on to several things you want to do as you present. Number one, move your eyes. Look at your people as you speak. Look at them for 5 to 10 seconds at the most. 10 seconds is getting plenty long. Because if you do it on a woman, I can often get this effect, and I don't want to do it. But, you know, I pick out this sister here, and I start talking to her and talking to her and talking to her. Everybody's going to start looking at her to see why I'm looking at her, and they aren't listening to me. They're looking at her, and they start to blush, and they aren't listening to you either because they wonder why you're looking at them. So as you speak, look at your people in the eye because it gives you the ability to see what's going on, but don't stare at them. Move your mouth. Articulate your words clearly. I credit whatever articulation I have to my dad. I used to milk with him, and we'd be down there in the milking parlor, and I'd say something to him. He'd be like, "What did you say?" And I'd be like, "Hum, hum, hum, hum," you know, and he'd be like, "What did you say?" And I'd be like, "Hum, hum, hum, hum," and he'd be like, "What did you say?" And I'd be like, "You know what I said." And he'd say, "Say it like that." He broke me of mumbling. So articulate your words clearly. Move your voice. Don't be monotone, cruise control voice and just talking one speed, one tone, just on and on. They'll fall asleep in just a few moments. Move your lips. Smile at the people when it's appropriate. Look at them and talk to them. Smile at them. You know, engage them. Move your hands. Keep your hands above your waist. Don't stand there with them hanging down. Don't you know, like this or like this, you know, for long periods of time are not appropriate ways of doing it. Keep your hands up, keep them moving. You don't have to be quite as dynamic as some Latin Americans are, you know, talking with your hands, but keep your hands moving and keep them above your waist. Move your body, move around the stage. That's the last one I have under moving. You're moving as you present. Move your body, move around the stage some. If there's some movement, it helps them stay more engaged. Okay, as you critique yourself and others, ask yourself these four questions. Distinct presentation. Did they have a distinct presentation? Something that was distinctly them. I don't have the opportunity to show you him, but my youngest brother is an ordained man. And his form of presentation is as different from mine as day and night. He uses a very slow dictation. He has very heavy thoughts. And he doesn't move around near as much as I do. He's a good speaker, but it's completely different. If he got up here and acted like me, and I tried to act like him, we'd both look like fools. Is the presentation distinct? Did they have plenty of good content? Did they use brilliant props? If they use props... And lastly, were they tastefully dressed? You don't want to be gaudily dressed, but you want to be tastefully dressed. And one of my mistakes on this CLE tour was I intended to bring a black shirt to respect the hosting community. And I left the house and I was flying through over Texas and I was like, oops, I forgot my shirt. So as you dress, try to dress in such a way that you're in keeping with whatever culture you're appearing before, as long as it doesn't violate your culture. Okay. In conclusion of teaching, remember this. Study up, stand up, speak up, sit down, shut down. Training. How did I train teaching? Or how did I train public speaking? I trained a presentation by simply starting out helping my students choose a subject. Take your students aside or study your students and figure out what is of interest to them. So you're going to be assigned to write on John Deere tractors, and I hope you like John Deere tractors. Okay, good guess. What is it about John Deere tractors you like? So, you know, you get you telling me what you like about them. And then I'd say, you know, go get some of your brochures on John Deere tractors, and you know, you bring those and help them find information in it. What we're doing is we help them choose a presentation. We find something that is interesting to them, because part of a presentation is you want somebody that's enthused about what they're speaking about. And then you help them narrow the subject down or widen the subject out to fill in the allotted time that they have been assigned. You know, if I gave you a 10-minute topic, I don't think you could talk about all of the different kinds of tractors John Deere has ever made. You probably would have to pick out a series of tractors, and that's what I'm talking about there. Help them choose a subject. Help them gather the facts. Help them know how to read. If they start bringing in a whole lot of John Deere advertisements as proof of the virtues of their tractor, you might need to bring in some international advertisements to show them how they kind of say the same thing, but from a different angle. Help them realize how to gather genuine or legitimate facts about what they're speaking about, and then help them choose the sequence. They sometimes will have a hard time choosing a sequence. You know, what order should I use? Well, what is a logical order to describe a tractor? I guess you could talk about its wheels. Yeah, what else? Engine, maybe? Well, yeah. So what do we have happening here? I don't know. What else can you talk about on the tractor? Well, it's got a cab. So what are you doing? You're going from the ground up. You see what's happening there? Help them see that. Now, is that really the order you want to use, from the ground up? Well, maybe not. What about from front to back? Well, you know, you can describe it from front to back. If you're giving a history of tractors, you want to use a time sequence or something like that. Your three main sequences are chronological sequences, time orders, that is. Spatial orders, like if you're describing something left to right, top to bottom, front to back, you know, that type of thing, around, going around something. And your third major sequence is order of importance. If you're coming in here with a topic on John Deere tractors to try to prove to everybody that John Deere tractors are the best, you're going to use an order of importance. Does that make sense, what we're doing with that? And they're going to have to be helped to get this kind of thing correct. Then they start developing an outline. The thing that often happens as you as you think about something, you think you've got an idea of how you want to present it, but when you start developing the outline, it changes. You start to see holes in your chain of thought. And you have to work at developing the outline. And as they, once they get that done, I usually have them start writing out their notes verbatim. I want to see it pretty much written out, word for word, how you're going to present it. And the reason you do that is several reasons. It fixes it in your mind, how you're going to present it. And number two, it forces you to think about your transitions from one thought to the next. And that is an important part of a public speech, is a smooth transition. If they have props or illustrations, make sure that they're appropriate. And have them practice using them. And lastly, get them to learn their opening and closing lines by memory. You want them to have the ability to get up there and look at the people. You don't want them looking at the papers. You don't want them looking somewhere else. You want them looking at the people as they present. And then as they conclude, you want them looking at the people. This is the reason you should have a John Deere tractor. And this is the reason you should have a John Deere tractor. You see the difference? You want them looking at the people. I'm about out of time here. And one of the cardinal rules of public speaking is going over time. Never forget that. What I think I'm going to do I have a couple men to volunteer? I'm not going to make you speak up today, but I'll show you what I would do. I need 2 or 3, 4 men, and I'll show you what I would do as I train them. Thank you. That's all we need. Just come up here and stand here. I think y'all are going to have a good chance at making good public speakers because you had enough oomph to come up here in front of this big crowd. This is the biggest crowd I've worked with. Now, what I will often do is I will demonstrate to them what I expect on the first time around. I would like, what I want you to do is just go up here like this, walk up here. Don't stick your hands in your pocket. Walk up here very naturally and just look at the people. And then walk over to the side. So you can go ahead and do that first. Just look at the people. And what you're looking at is you try to be just as natural as possible. Very good. Now you can come stand over here, and the next one would do it. And we would do the same thing with all of the students. And as they go up, some of them come walk up kind of stiff. Thank you. That's very good. They'll walk up kind of stiff, and we're like, okay, let's try that again. A little bit more limber. Not too limber, but, a little bit more limber. And then the next thing I would do is and I'm not going to make you do this one, but what I would do is I'd say, okay, I want you to walk up there just like you did, but this time I want you to look at them and then say, good afternoon. And they'll go up there and they'll do it, and you just break it down steps. You may be seated. Thank you for your help. And we keep going around and around this circle. We do a little bit one day, we do a little bit the next day, and next week we do a little bit more. And after a while, as their topic is coming together, I get them to memorize their first lines of their topic, so when they come up, they can get behind the mic, look at the people, say good afternoon, and quote their first line of their topic. And basically, if you can get them past that point, you're 90% of the way to having a person that will be able to present in public. If you can get them started right, and you've helped them prepare their material correctly, the next part of proceeding rapidly, well, not too rapidly, but rapidly, with your material. Don't kill any time. Just get going and keep going. It isn't hard to get them to do, and trust me, if you're training them to speak, they will know how to conclude very rapidly. They won't spend a lot of time on their conclusion. And then to conclude and sit down. Several tips that I have gathered over the years. As you approach here, swallow, take a deep breath. Not too deep a breath, but a deep breath, and get started. If you take too deep of a breath, you'll sound windy when you start. And you don't want to sound windy when you start. And if you don't have enough of a breath, you'll run out of air before you're done with your first sentence. And that doesn't sound very good either. Do not apologize. Well, I'm glad to be here with you all this afternoon. But I know there's a lot of men here that have more practice at this than I do, and they could do a lot better job at this. But, I'll try to do my best because, God has given me the responsibility. Please, don't apologize for who God has created you to be. I know you don't know everything. I didn't expect you to know everything. We asked you to share with us what you know. Now, if you do goof during your topic, let's say you make a, say, Galatians chapter 3, verse 22 instead of Ephesians chapter 3, verse 22, then apologize and briefly, like, oops, I'm sorry about that, let's back up, that is, and then proceed from there. A couple weeks ago, I was leading songs at a wedding, and between the time I got the list of the songs and between the time the songs went into the folder for the wedding, they switched two of them around, so the first song was song number 3 instead of song number 1. So I got up and I said, first song, let's sing this song, song number 1 in your folders, and we sang it, and we sang the second song. I sat down, my wife nudged me, and she's like, boy, I blushed. Well, I got up in the middle of the service to lead the song in the middle of the service, and I was like, well, I goofed on that one. Let's sing. And I told them what we're going to sing, and everybody chuckled, and we went right along. So apologize. If you need to apologize, apologize very briefly. Quit on time. I've already said that one. If you have nothing to say, say nothing. I remember a few years ago, a fella came to the church I was at, and he got up, and he used every articulation trick in the bag that I've ever seen. And I was there listening to him, trying to figure out what his devotions were about. I just couldn't make heads and tails of what he was talking about. And after about 15 minutes, he says, you know, I didn't have anything to say, let's pray. I was like, I was getting the drift. I have a lot more respect for the man who, again, he was a new man in the community, and he didn't know about a custom. One of the customs in the churches I grew up in is if you showed up, you could be nabbed for devotions. Well, he didn't know that. He shows up, he's walking in the door, the bishop taps him on the shoulder and he says, can you have devotions? He's like, you mean after the songs? He's like, yeah. Like, I can try. We had two songs and then he had to have devotions and he wasn't prepared. He went up and he said something like this. He says, I wasn't prepared, I'm not prepared. We're going to read a psalm, I'm going to make a few comments and then we're going to pray. So we read a psalm, he made a couple of comments and we prayed. He was honest about where he was, and I respect that. He had nothing to say, and he didn't spend 15 minutes proving it. Remember that you can't please everyone. A couple years ago, I was on the CLE tour with Brother Howard Bean. If Brother Howard got good marks, I usually got low marks on the evaluation forms. If I got good marks on the evaluation forms, it wasn't uncommon to see him getting low marks. And that is the blessing of different folks in our congregations. This brother has the ability to reach a group that the next brother doesn't have the ability to reach, and vice versa. Remember, we need each other. You can't please everyone. Just do your best. Train. Take every opportunity that is given to you with a thanks and do your best. That is the point I want you to remember. That's the point you should teach as you teach your students. Take every opportunity you have and do your best with it. In conclusion, I'm paraphrasing Ecclesiastes where it says, whatsoever your hand findeth to do it with your might. Whatsoever topic is assigned to you, do it with your might. And those listening will be blessed. I'm going to go back and do what I told you not to do. Don't read your notes. I'll try not to read them. Number one, keep them simple. No more than 6 words per line and no more than 6 lines per slide. Use words or phrases, not complete sentences. Pictures and illustrations are great because you can put them together and they have a lot of information in them. Do not turn around and read your PowerPoint. You know, da 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 da. They can read it. If you want them to read it, say read that. And then step aside and let them read that or give it to them on a handout. But don't read it to them. They're not in first grade. And remember that you control the presentation. Don't let your projections control you. Yes, you want to keep them flipping along. Every minute or two you want to change something. But don't let it control you. White out the screen. Or black out the screen by hitting the key as W or B, W for white it out, B for black it out, and then you hit it again, and it'll bring it back up. Those are some points I've tried to remember as I have used PowerPoint. Keep it simple, no fancy animations, just a few words or points on each point. Any other questions or comments? These notes to this topic are available. Just look at the bottom of your handout. You'll see my email address. You are welcome to email me, and you can receive what I have in my notes. It's almost verbatim to what you had today. Not quite all of it, but most of it. Thank you, and you are dismissed for break. May God bless your afternoon.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.